Our next storyteller, when I find my place, prefers to tell stories to students under the age of adulthood. That's us. But also likes a good challenge, which is why she has found herself here tonight. The title of her story is called Straw into Gold. Please welcome Beth Krieger-Fritch.
I stared down the hill, steep, frozen with icy snow. I watched as my siblings gathered around the periphery. The hill was thick with trees, and if you looked carefully enough, you might notice a subtle trail. That's where we were gonna sled down. We had already named it Double Daredevil Hill, so we had to do it. I heard the footsteps of my brother Mark gaining speed behind me. Yahoo! He called as he sailed through the air, face first, as if on a magic carpet, winding his way deftly through the trees, somehow making it unscathed. Next was my sister Helen, who dutifully and somehow completely independently from Mark sailed down after him. Steve, my oldest brother, was finding the most dangerous route that he could and took that hill kamikaze style. My youngest brother, in his two big hand-me-down moon boots, trudged melancholically through the snow, his cheeks giving off the impression that he was pouting, but really they were so big and thick and round and wonderful, we just teased him. We knew he was deep in contemplation. My oldest sister, Mona, watched from the top of the hill and wisely allowed what was happening. It was dark. The only light was moonshine glinting off the snow. I wiped the trail of snot that was running from my nose into my mouth like a warm, sad waterfall. I gathered my strength, holding on to the sled. And with a little running start, I took off head first into the darkness. With my siblings, I could do anything. There were six of us growing up. I was the fifth one. So if you're a middle child, what that means is I was the middle of the middle children, which what that means is I was an excellent observer of everyone's trials and triumphs. And I stood back and I watched what worked and what didn't work, and I took notes, and I paused for a little bit longer, and then I decided what I was going to do. This worked. But it led me to feel sometimes a little bit on the outside. I was also melancholic, and so I felt that way no matter what. And watching all the things my siblings did and me taking a step back, looking at their brilliance and their bravery, I wondered, would I be able to do the same things? My parents kept that theme of being a little bit different for us alive. In 1984, it was not legal to homeschool in Wisconsin, and that year they passed a law making it legal, so the next year we started doing that. The UPS man would come, and five of us would meet him at the door, dressed up as G.I. Joe and gymnasts and wandering nomads, and he would give us sideways looks, but we'd say, "We go to homeschool." He'd leave the package and be on his way. It was okay to feel different. When you feel different, you kind of fill yourself up with, what is that? A sense of yourself, I guess. Maybe a little drop of what will be your future self, that individuality that isn't fully there yet when you're so deeply connected with your tribe. Well, this would continue. Our playground on the hills and in the rivers, whatever we couldn't do, Mark helped us find a way to do. There was a river. It was on someone else's land, but we found a way there. We didn't have a boat, but there was a junkyard next door and a fiberglass door, so we took that and tested the physics and buoyancy, and a flat-nosed prow of a boat works to go up and down a river, turns out. It wasn't all fun and games. My mother homeschooled us, and it was not the unschooling that sometimes you hear about. It was a rigorous schedule. Academics were immensely important to her. but so too was the cultivation of our spiritual life, and we did that differently as well. I was raised Roman Catholic, but instead of the acoustic guitar-playing churches that were much closer and in actual churches, we went to Marchese's dance hall, which we rented out Sunday morning after a wedding had been there Saturday night, and were lulled into deep prayer and contemplation and sometimes sleep by the dead language of Latin all around us. But I truly did take in the sounds, the incense, the Gregorian chant, and I prayed devoutly for the health and safety of every family member. Almost compulsively, I wouldn't miss a single prayer. And then I would look up at the altar, which was where the bar had been rolled away an hour earlier, to see him, Jesse Batha, the altar boy whom I had the biggest crush on in the world. I looked up and I thought, this is a sad case of unrequited love. It's never going to work because he's dating my sister Helen. So as usual, I took a step back and I watched and I learned from their trials and tribulations and I took notes and I thought, I will figure out how to thread my way through this one day too. It wouldn't be long. Because as I got older and passed through that middle childhood time period of life, in Waldorf circles we call it the 9-year change, but I'll spare you those details. I was somewhere between 8 and 11 years old, probably closer to 11, and we were at one of those Catholic family parties. It was Halloween. They were Catholic families, so there were hordes of people everywhere from every single age with casseroles cooking and jello molds and lots of diaper smells, and it was a wild scene around me. I tell you, it was Halloween, that time when the veil between the two worlds is so thin, between the conscious and unconscious, the living, the dead, the visible, the invisible. The whole scene became blurry in front of me. My ears plugged up and rang, and in that moment, one thread of my future self and another thread of my future self came inside of me. I looked to one side, and I thought, I have no choice. I have to become a nun. I need to serve the holy in my life. I need to transform what doesn't work into what can be beautiful. And at the same time, I knew I had a beloved out there somewhere in the world. Not like a mystic beloved of God, like a carnal man. I even felt the soft curve of our future baby heads in my arms. I held both of those completely opposing disparate parts, but they braided themselves inside of me, and I would never go back. My vision went into focus, my ears unplugged, and I went back to the older kids who were telling yo mama jokes, and I ate caramel corn. Soon, I would get to go to high school. No longer would I attend homeschool in the basement with my plastic dishpan of books, but instead, I would go to a brick and mortar school, and I was thrilled. Even though it was a small private high school, I was thrilled nonetheless, but I made a decision. That feeling of being a little separate and different from those around me had really solidified in me, and I thought, I'm going to be different than those who are here. I'm going to separate myself. I joined cross country, but I wore my grunge alternative clothes that came off the floor of my friend's basement. I said no to cigarettes, but I kept Kurt Cobain's suicide note tacked up in my locker. When all the girls in my class were talking about this boy who they thought was so cute, one of the sophomores, I said, Tommy Fritsch? I don't even think he's that cute. I was practiced at external antagonism. And I carried on that way and tried to find the most controversial relationships I could get myself involved in for years and years until it finally started to wear out inside of me just a little bit. This happens somewhere around your junior year. A restlessness. You need something different. I listened to Tupac's Changes soundtrack over and over and over again, and that's what I needed, some changes. So I decided to break up with my boyfriend of 3 years for the third and final time. And in my moment of darkness, I did what I often did. I returned to religion. My dearest friend, Marta, wanted to come with me to the Stations of the Cross at Holy Hill. It was Good Friday. She was from Spain and wanted this American experience. So I said, we can do that. So we went. And we watched as 10 robed men carried a gigantic cross down the aisle to the altar. And it was rumored that a shard of that cross from the original cross at Golgotha was inlaid in there, so everyone could go to the front and touch it and have a feeling of that connection. We came home and we did what 17-year-olds do, or 16-year-olds. I don't know, we painted our toenails or we gossiped or we were doing something, and the phone rang and my mother answered it. Elizabeth, telephone! I pulled the long cord down from my parents' room into my bedroom and looked at the caller ID and it said Thomas Fritsch. Marta and I freaked out. What? It's Tommy Fritsch. What are we going to do? I don't know what to do. But in our practice way, I picked it up and I said, hello? A movie? Spaceballs? I thought you were dating Monica. Oh, you broke up yesterday? Okay. As usual, and as is still true to this day, I overscheduled myself the next day when we were supposed to meet for this date. I taught swimming lessons in the morning, I put on my denim button-up shirt for Country Kitchen, and I went to serve eggs and steak. And the second shift didn't show up, as also usually happened. This is not a time of cell phones or snapping or whatever, and I didn't have his phone number memorized, so I couldn't call him to say I might be a little bit late. So I raced through serving dishes quick as I could. I finally convinced the assistant cook to come out and hold the floor for me, and I raced home. My mother, who had no interest in any of my boyfriends before, threw me a washcloth. I washed my armpits off. I took some Bath & Body Works strawberry essence gel and ran it through my hair. I didn't want to appear too desperate, so I put an Adidas t-shirt on. And then, in my Pontiac Safari 1990 station wagon, I put the pedal to the metal. And I turned a 40-minute drive into 30 minutes, but I was 2 hours late for our meeting time. There's no way Tommy Fritsch is going to be there. I wouldn't be there. I would have left after half an hour. I would have said, what a jerk. That's what I thought. But when I pulled in, that familiar silhouette was leaning against the brick and mortar of the movie theater. That familiar silhouette, the most comforting safe haven, the greatest tribe member I can possibly imagine. I have to connect the title of my story really quick because I know there's not a lot of time. There's this story, Rumpelstiltskin, where the queen mother is given an impossible task. She needs to spin a whole room of straw into gold. She can't do it alone. It's impossible. So a little sprightly figure shows up and makes a deal with her, and then it happens. Only it's not hers. She doesn't own it. It hasn't been integrated into her. It's still an unconscious thing inside of her. But eventually, she learns how to name it. And it's no longer unconscious. It's the most conscious thing, the most beautiful muse one can imagine. So I will name that for you. Anna Rose, May, Ollie, my beloved Tommy, with you all I can do anything.